former NHLer, TSN analyst, joins us now. Ray, how are you, my man?
I'm doing good. I was in Ottawa and about 2 feet of snow yesterday. Haven't seen that all winter, man. It was a reminder of what winter is.
Well, did they set like a one-day record for most snowfall?
It was crazy. It was a record yesterday, and I was in Chicago the night before for the Leafs dismantling, and they said, "Oh, there's weather in Ottawa," and I didn't even really give it much thought because I thought, well, it's usually Chicago where the problem is. And when we landed, I mean, you couldn't see. But I guess they could see enough to land, but there wasn't much more than that. It was that was an eye opener for sure. It was pretty messy, and it's funny, you never think of it, but somehow like 10 or 11,000 people made their way to the game last night.
Yeah.
Like that was a hell of an effort to get there.
Well, I saw the crowd, and obviously, you know what, the diehard fans, they make their way there. And you know, what's interesting, Ray, you got the Canada right now is facing something that hasn't happened since 1970. And that's seeing no Canadian team in the playoffs, and none of them really look like a great realistic chance. Somebody's going to have to get extremely hot to make it. If you had to pick one of, I guess, the three out of Vancouver, Ottawa, and Montreal, because they have the most likely chance, which one do you think could make the playoffs?
I'm going to say Vancouver, I guess, and say that with like zero confidence. And the reason I say that is that Montreal and Ottawa got to climb so many teams, and there's so many teams that are bunched together. So it's a good thing on one hand that the teams are bunched together. The bad thing is it's unlikely that they're all going to hit the ditch at the same time. So you might get hot, but you've got to pass, four teams to get in, and it's likely that, you know, somebody ahead of you is going to match you somewhere, unless somebody goes on a crazy Ottawa run of last year. But I mean, that was historic. That's, you know, that's very unlikely to happen again. Although I mean, Vancouver, you know, their last two games, they got outscored at home 10-4. I mean, they look dreadful right now.
There's a lot of teams that look dreadful, and it's funny. Canada, I guess the only good news is that the draft lottery will be the most watched lottery in the history of Canada because all seven teams will be in it. Right now, there's a 60% chance that Canada is going to go home with the number one overall pick.
Well, and to stretch that out a bit, the first three players in the draft are really, really noteworthy players to watch. And so it's quite likely that Canada could end up with at least a couple of them. And that would be pretty cool to watch, because I watched Jack Eichel last night, and I'm telling you, Jason, it's, you know, this is just a few nights after watching McDavid, you know, dance all over the place and get 5 points. And that kid's pretty special too. It's pretty impressive watching him skate with the puck. Like when he goes through the neutral zone, you know how McDavid seems to just, you know, like people fall off him because they can't keep up. Eichel's a different skater. It's more of a brutish, powerful stride than McDavid's. McDavid's more of an elegant stride, I would say. But, man, nobody can keep up to either of them when they got the puck, and that's just – it's astounding watching them play.
Yeah, it would be a great race, honestly, to see which one of those two is quicker. And Todd McClellan, speaking of Connor McDavid, had some interesting comments about him. And, you know, last night against the Ducks, a lot of line matching. Bruce Boudreau really wanted to get, Kessler or Getzlaf out against him as much as possible. The Ducks are a big, heavy, nasty team. And it's, you know, it's a different type of game, kind of like a playoff game last night, and a good learning experience for a young guy. And I know the Oilers aren't going into the playoffs, Ray, but you know, Connor talked about it afterwards and said, "Yeah, you know what? It's a noticeable difference." And the Anaheim Ducks are now playing like the Ducks that everyone expected them to be. They look really dangerous.
Well, I would say the biggest surprise is that they were so bad early on. Not that they're playing well now. I mean, I almost hesitate to ask where you had them picked because you and I have such a terrible track record. But I had them in the Western Conference Final. And come to think of it, I think I had them as the Western Conference champion.
This year?
This year. Yeah. They started out 1-7-2, and I wasn't telling anybody that. Right? It wasn't like I was offering that up very often. But they are good. And, you know, really the biggest, to me, the biggest change to them is the, they found the ability to split Getzlaff and Perry, and that makes them obviously a more dangerous team. And if you can spread your scoring out, you know, it gives you a different prong to the attack. I think you'll see them. They've got a boatload of young defensemen. They've got a couple of them in Hampus Lindholm and Sami Vatanen who they have to sign this year, and that'll be really challenging. I think you see Anaheim at the deadline move one of those defensemen for another forward and a significant forward, whether it's somebody like Louis Erickson from Boston or who's an unrestricted free agent, or Andrew Ladd from Winnipeg, somebody like that, you know, a significant player. Anaheim's well positioned to add that to their lineup.
Well, the one guy that I would find very intriguing is if Carolina thinks they're out of it, and they're not right now. I think they're 50-50 chance to make the postseason, but the Ducks are a team that has enough cap space if they wanted to absorb Eric Staal. And I know they've got a lot of centers, but man, that would be an intriguing one, a guy who's won a Stanley Cup, albeit a decade ago, and really hasn't had much taste of the playoffs since, probably could be licking his chops maybe to want to go on a playoff run. I'm very curious to see what happens in Carolina.
Well, I'll be shocked if Carolina doesn't move him, because it makes no sense for them to not. Yes, I know they're in a playoff race, but what's the point in keeping him if you're not going to get him re-signed in the offseason? He already makes $8.25 million, right? That's his cap hit. You know, Carolina's not going to ante up that again. Eric Staal's play right now kind of reminds me of a player that you have an opinion of, but the opinion really is not what reality is. The opinion and the perception is what he used to be. And Eric doesn't quite go as fast as he used to go. I'm not sold that Louis Erickson or Andrew Ladd's not every bit as good a fit as Eric Staal might be for a team like Anaheim.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. Ray, a few other teams. You talk about the Ducks needing to add. What about the Los Angeles Kings? Because that's actually the team I did pick to represent the West. So for once, you and I have different opinions on that. But
maybe one of us will be
yeah,
right.
Well,
this
that's
year.
True. Exactly. Maybe yeah. There's no San Jose Shark pick coming from you or I. I can tell you that.
No.
But what do you think the Kings will add?
Well, they don't have a whole bunch of room financially to add. I think they'd like to add another defenseman if they could. I'm not sure. I haven't heard over the last few days what the prognosis is for Marian Gaborik, who was hurt in New York last week. You know, if they're worried that he's not ready, maybe they got to try and find another forward. But, you know, LA is the type of team that, like Chicago, I would say that, you know, they're looking at their window and the immediacy of their window and the you know, their best players are right in their peak years, and you're trying to maximize as much as you can. They might move out younger pieces, a younger asset, in order to acquire a veteran, whether it's on the blue line or another forward. You know, they're like Chicago has been doing this dance for, you know, well over half a decade. Win a cup, retool, then win a cup the next year and retool, then win a cup. And, you know, like when you look at their roster, Chicago needs a forward too, but they don't have any cap room. And so, you know, are they willing to move a player, for example? And look, this is just speculation. So people, you know, there's no research into this, but are they willing to move a player like Teuvo Teravainen, who was their first round pick a couple of years ago, for immediate help this year? Because in the offseason, that player is going to have to go anyway, kind of like what they did with Antoine Vermette last year. Are they going to be able to do that? Will they be willing to do that? And the way the league is, while your star guys are at their peak and everybody's so close, man, I think you have to take a puncher's chance at it. You have to try to win when you're kind of in your garden spot. And LA's there too. They really are. Those are teams that, you know, yes, you have to keep an eye on the future, but you can't get caught looking at the future and forget about today when you're, you know, when you're in the thick of it.
What about Dallas and St. Louis then, sticking with that premise of, you know, teams that you would think, hey, they're in the fight for sure. St. Louis is one that everybody has always been waiting for them to take the next step. I'm not sure they're capable of it or not, but is this maybe the last go-round? Because Hitchcock, this is the last year of his contract. I think he's either got to have some success in the postseason or he's done for sure.
Well, I would say St. Louis has more immediacy to their quest than Dallas would. Dallas, I think, would tell you they're probably a little bit ahead of the game of where they thought they were going to be. Dallas, for sure, would love to add a defenseman. I'm not the least bit sold on their goalies. I like one less than the other, actually, instead of one more than the other. And that depends on who's in that night. You know, I mean, they're Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi are... They have such erraticness to their game that I don't know that Dallas can overcome that. They've got some terrific young defensemen and some really, really explosive forwards, but keeping the puck out of their net, I think, is the biggest challenge. For St. Louis, you know, I know, and I've been reading about how disappointing a year they've had. Man, their team has been train wrecked by injury. I don't even know how you would evaluate St. Louis other than they've somehow kept their head above water in a really, really difficult division, and they're starting to get some people back. They just got Jaden Schwartz back. That's a big deal for their lineup. Their record with and without him is actually kind of astounding. They're so much better when he's in the lineup. I think they would like to add. I think they would like to add a forward. Can they get it done? I guess we'll see. They're a team that, you know, is not a, you know, a high budget team all the time. They don't spend all the time as much as maybe some other teams, but they've got a pretty hefty payroll. They've got some guys that, you know, Backes is coming up to unrestricted free agency. You mentioned Hitchcock's last year of his contract. There is some immediacy to them having some success.
A few other interesting ones. The Washington Capitals, the best team in the National Hockey League, maybe some small tweaks. And also, Patrick Marleau quietly asked for a trade earlier this season. Nothing's moved on that. The Sharks are currently in a playoff spot. Do you see him possibly being dealt at the deadline?
Well, I'd never say never. I mean, he's, you know, if he's gone and advanced that trade request and, you know, pretty quietly things have not moved along, and he, the last I checked, I think he was like one empty net goal in 21 games or something. You know, it's been a pretty dry stretch for him. But Patrick Marleau, for a guy that gets kicked in the shins as much as he does, he's still a pretty good player. You know, he could really help a good team. And but I would be surprised if they move him now. I think that's more of a summer deal if that's going to happen. As far as Washington, I don't know. What would they add? Maybe another defenseman? I mean, they got 10 losses. It's not like they're springing leaks, you know. The other night, Philip Grubauer played in goal and made 41 saves. You know, they're like, okay, so we're good in backup. As a backup goalie, we don't need anybody else. I don't see Washington in any great need to do anything, really.
There's been lots of talk. I've talked to a few scouts. There are some teams in the Eastern Conference that seem to have some interest in Justin Schultz. I've been trying to find out which ones that, you know, maybe I would look at a team that maybe thinks, hey, next year we got to get to the cap floor so we won't bother. We'd be, you know, not opposed to paying him $3.9 million because I can't see any sane team paying him $3.9 million. Do you think he gets moved at the deadline? And is he a guy that can show more than what he's shown? Or is this what Justin Schultz is?
Well, I mean, it's been a couple of years now that, you know, where you said he's been a real dangerous player. You know, my first coach in Hartford, Jack Evans, took me aside after my second game. I had a goal and three assists, and I was -4. And he told me I was a threat at both ends of the ice.
Yeah.
Right? He said, son, you're a threat at both ends of the ice out there. And that's kind of what Justin Schultz is. And I don't know. You couldn't get me to be interested, that's for sure. I'm not paying him $4 million.
Oh, no.
You know, and so could he be moved? Sure. Is it likely it would be an Eastern Conference team? For sure, because you know, they might not have seen the warts up close. I think there's lots there. I think he's a I think he's got terrific skill. I just don't think he processes the game very well. And he's not firm enough to play a simple game. Like, you know, lots of guys get by. They don't process the game super great, but they're really firm in their defensive zone, and then they make a simple first pass, and they're out of the zone. Everything with Justin Schultz appears to be a little bit of a high-wire act. And look around the NHL. What teams are encouraging their players to take a chance on the ice? It's the National Boring League for the most part now. I mean, you're getting into the part of the year where, you know, safe is what everybody's looking for. Get the puck. It, you know, you hear the same thing all the time. Manage the puck. Pucks out, pucks in, which means don't make any turnovers. And when has Justin's game not included some turnovers?
Yeah, and you know what? You can accept turnovers at times when you're at least producing. But when you're producing, no offense or generating it, man, those mistakes. And we saw it last night.
But Jason, nobody accepts turnovers anymore. And that to me is a major detriment to a lot of teams.
Yeah,
I agree.
I was
in Chicago the other night, and they turned the puck over a little bit. But I'll tell you, they get it. They're trying to make plays. They're trying to advance the puck. I was also in Ottawa last night, where Ottawa and Buffalo played basically a ping pong match. You know, long pass to the far blue line, tipped in behind the net. Everybody chase after it. If you don't get to it first, then the other team shoots it back up the other side of the boards. They tip it into the zone, and everybody chases after it. Like I think teams could really do themselves a favor by just releasing the strings just a little bit on the players. And so they know that because these guys are really good. They're really skilled. Let them make a play.
Yeah.
I think you'd be surprised with some of the results.
Oh, I agree with you there. Now, like, there's obviously certain mistakes are acceptable, and then others in the eyes of a coach are unacceptable. And very quickly, Pouliot took a penalty. And Todd McLellan was upset because they had discussed it that morning that their team's taking too many penalties, and he takes one. He gets demoted to the fourth line. Yakubov gets promoted. Then Yakubov has an egregious turnover at the blue line, results in a goal. Pouliot gets back on that line and then takes another penalty 50 seconds into the third period and basically doesn't see the ice again. You know what? Pouliot's been a veteran player who's produced pretty well this season for the Edmonton Oilers, all things considered, and he tries to be aggressive in the offensive zone, which is great, but he just doesn't seem to know when to walk the line.
How long has he been in Edmonton? Is this 3 years?
Second? Maybe it's his third.
You know, I mean, I kind of lose the years, you know, a little bit, but
I think it's his second.
The last year that he was with the Rangers, he took a million offensive zone penalties in the offensive zone in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right? He took a million. It was crazy. I want to say 8 or 9 in the playoffs. And that has been part of his track record throughout his career. So it's like making soup. You know, it's lots of different things that go into making the soup. This blip has been in his game forever. And I don't know how it all of a sudden is going to change. And so, you know, you got to remember in the game, you're making a decision in not even a second. You know, the guy gets by you. Why do some guys never take penalties? Because in that 1 second, they realize, I can't get there, and I'm going to let him go, and now I got to skate. But to Pouliot, he must think, hey, I've got a chance, and he gets a stick out. Because most of his penalties are stick penalties in the offensive zone. It's either a trip or a hook or a slash. They're almost all the same. And then Yakupov gets his chance, and you can guarantee he goes on the ice and he's thinking, man, this is my chance. If you guys all watching are thinking the same thing, you can guarantee the player is. And that's, man, this is my chance. And then he burps one up, and there goes his chance. Sometimes you try so hard, you want something so bad, the opportunity comes and you fumble it away. And, you know, that's probably what happened to Yakupov last night.
Ray, hopefully their knee heals up well. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
It's getting there. It's slow, man. It's slow. Like me, it's slow.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate your time.
See ya.